in the spiritual realm, Krishna, who is beyond spiritual, he is the creator of spiritual, then he is self-satisfied because he is complete in himself. He does not require anything else because he is the sum total of everything. So he is enjoying in this way. He is Atmarama. But to increase this pleasure, he expands the material and spiritual worlds. And by so doing, then the living entities in the spiritual realm, then they engage in relationships with the Lord. Now these relationships are very different from the relationships here. The five rasas are there. That is the perfect manifestation of all variety of exchange between living entities. But there, the devotee is performing these activities for the Lord's pleasure alone. So there, in the spiritual world, you get a perfect the perfect balance between the consciousness of the living entity and the form and activities that they perform. Out of affection for Krishna, then they manifest particular forms. Those in the parental rasa manifest those forms of those in the, as the elderly gopis and the elderly gopas. Those in friendship will manifest those forms of cowherd boys that are similar age of Krishna, so they can play with Krishna and be friends with Krishna. And the gopis, they manifest forms that are then conducive for their conjugal relationship with Krishna. So we see that the mentality of the devotee, the nature of their affection, the form, the activities, they all match perfectly. So that means, except for Krishna, everything else manifested in the spiritual realm is prakriti, or feminine. And Krishna, he is the Purusha, the enjoyer. He is the male. So there's a perfect balance between male and female in the spiritual realm. Therefore, everything goes so peacefully. Everything is so nice. Because the internal potency then wants to serve, wants to please Krishna. And all activities are simply done to please Krishna. There is no selfish motive in the least. There's not one activity, not one breath, not one movement is there where there's any idea that I will also get something out of this. It is simply Krishna will be pleased by these activities. So then there is perfect harmony in the activities there. Now, a living entity then thinks that why only Krishna should enjoy? I also can enjoy. So now the problem starts. Then that living entity, having been placed in the material world, then takes on so many activities. Now we see that the problems start, the mixing starts, the aberration, the abnormalities start. Because now what we start to have now is everybody in the material world is prakriti or feminine, all the living entities. But the reason that they're here, they're only here because they've all developed a masculine mentality. Therefore we see in the Bhagavatam it always says he. It never talks about she, but it's always saying he. Because it applies. It applies to the man and it applies to every living entity. Because every living entity in the material world thinks they are a man. That's everything. Every blade of grass, every tree, every dog, cat, every human. Doesn't matter what the gender is. They all think they are male. They're the enjoyer, the controller. So So now we have all and everybody in the material world, every living entity is feminine, supposed to be pleasing Krishna. So you have a universe full of females who all think they're males, and then to enact, because we wanted to enjoy like Krishna. So there's five rasas there, there's all the different natural matching of forms and activities there. So therefore those are replicated here, because when you have the tree, it is reflected in the water, it still looks like a tree. It's not something else. So therefore there, Krishna in a male form, he is male, he is in a male form. So he is performing activities to please Krishna. I mean himself and his devotees. And the devotees are then taking appropriate forms there to match with this. So then here also, then some living entities, because we want to do, we're not going to get anything else. Right? What is it called? There's a saying, fry a fish in its own oil. So the living entities, they want to enjoy separate from Krishna, so they're going to have to take care of all this themselves, amongst themselves. Because they're not going to get any spiritual nature here. So then the material nature, which is also feminine, but of an inferior nature, then bodies are created so that the living entities can try to exploit each other. Each living entity in the consciousness, in the male consciousness to exploit, then exploits each other. And in this way, then it's going on. So we see it's a very strange, mix that we have here. So when Bhagavatam talks about these things, especially in this chapter for us of enjoyment, it's telling it as it is. This is not some heavy shloka that the brahmacharis take and go, you household is dirty, greasy, like this. No. The point is this is every living entity who's in the material world. So we can use this to see the benefits of the celibacy. We can use this to see how to properly perform duties in the grihastha ashram. We can also use this to see how to become completely detached from the material energy. So we see at every stage of life, this verse is useful, no matter what it is. Because the principle that's being made here is the living entity, by association with material nature, becomes attracted and wants to control and enjoy it. This is the point that is being made. So now, what we're talking now is on a very, philosophical platform. But this is the reality of what is going on. We think it's so nice, all this and that, and so many different relationships and all these things. But actually, that's just going on within the illusion. The actual thing is one living entity is relating to another. But not understanding that, we see the body in between. Right? Just like if you have two living entities and they put on these nice, Greek theatrical masks or something, and then they talk to each other. So, but the each one thinks, oh, such a nice mask. It talks so nicely. It has such nice beauty. Oh, such pleasant qualities. They don't understand it's the person behind the mask that is actually who they are seeing, who they are relating to. But the whole existence is based on the body. So here this verse is trying to point out that this is a useless endeavor, because it will only give trouble. Because such endeavors then keep us here, life after life, birth after birth. This verse is probably one of the most essential in this forest of enjoyment, because here is the key, what keeps one here, and what makes one especially go down in the existence. Are there any questions on this particular level, because there's a few levels. Yeah. It means it should be on this level.
Oh, relating to the translation.
Well, you can, but I was going to get into that next. Like that, but you can go ahead. Maybe that will give a start for going down to the... Means first level is looking at it as the soul and its relationships with the other soul and the material energy. Then the next is getting down to more the cultural level that we're dealing with here. Go ahead, what's your question?
No, I was just interested in maybe you could comment that it says in the translation, the beauty of the opposite sex, which is called the soul's attractive, or the conditioned soul is attracted by the beauty of the opposite sex, which is called pramada. Pramada, doesn't that mean madness?
Yes, well, that's exactly what's going on. If you're not mad, then one can't get involved like that. I mean, we ourselves know how funky and dirty our bodies are, like that. But somehow or another, we become mad and we find that there is great interests in the association with it. So that is the point that is being made here, is that it's madness. Because we're spirit souls. But at the same time, then we try to enjoy the material nature. The material nature then has been, because it's been empowered by Krishna. Krishna enters it as the universal form. Otherwise, we are also spirit. So we would have no interest in the material nature. But Krishna can't give us the spiritual nature to play around with, because that's meant for him. And everybody in the spiritual nature doesn't want to take part in the insanity of those living entities who turn their face to Krishna. So Krishna is very kind, and he gives the shadow of the internal potency. Like that. So Krishna, as the supreme male, enjoys the internal potency, the Sarup Shakti. So the living entity wants to be male. So then he gives the shadow of the Sarup Shakti, which is also feminine, but of inferior quality, to the living entity. But because it is something that he can't relate to, you know, it's just like we're here, and then if we, you know, we're thinking, yes, we should get married, and then we bring a nice aardvark or something like that, then you'll think, maybe this is not exactly what I was thinking about, you know. So then Krishna has to enter the external potency and make it attractive, because he's all attractive. He's the most attractive. You know, he's Madan Mohan. Everyone is attracted to him. So by him entering the material nature, it becomes attractive. So we have a tin can running around on some rubber wheels, and then we think, oh, what a wonderful car. You know, this is the latest in fashion. Right? Because Krishna's entered that. Otherwise, why would a tin can... I mean, every day we use tin cans and throw them in the garbage. We're not overly attractive. But this tin can is wonderful. Right? So like that, Krishna enters. So when he enters in this form of Cupid, this creates the illusion of pramada. It creates this So here in this, it has two points. One is it points out as just the technical, how it's working, is the fire and butter. So the feminine form is especially empowered, so that creates enough fire to melt the butter, as is being pointed out here. But the point is the fire of the material energy is already melted the living entity that is in that feminine body. So that female there, the living entity in the female body, wants to enjoy, because they're in the male mood. They want to enjoy the material energy. Right? So the material energy, the man's body, the woman's body, both are material energy. So living entity wants to enjoy. So each one is in an enjoying mood. This is the difference. In the spiritual realm, Krishna is the male, they're the females, they want to please Krishna. So there's no, they're not trying to exploit the situation. But in the material world, it's mutual exploitation. Right? Means, in other words, you find the right person is that right person who allows you to exploit the other person the way you want to exploit, and they don't complain. Then we call, yes, this is a good match. They let me exploit the way I like, and I let them exploit the way they like, and somehow or another the likes are similar, so then it's a good relationship. So it's based on mutual exploitation. That is the material. Now we're talking bare bones material energy here. You know? So now what is being pointed out is that the living entity who is interested in spiritual life understands all this and doesn't want to be fooled by this, doesn't want to be taken for a ride again and again like they have been for unlimited lifetimes. So therefore they want to use their situation to the best way possible to get out of the material nature. That is the desire of the devotee. So then naturally, if detachment is not as so complete, means if detachment is complete, one can avoid the grihastha ashram. If the understanding is there, but the realization is not so strong, then one can enter the grihastha ashram, but with this knowledge. Then, mentions here, then one can engage in to have children for the benefit of that family, the society, or the whole world. Because you want to attract a devotee. It means devotees' families, devotees take birth in. But there are also different qualities of devotees, like we see in our community. There's ones who are very serious, ones who are not so serious, ones who are, you know, right out on the outside edge. But they're devotees. You ask them, even the person out there, you know, the devotee who, you know, follows the two regs, you know, very seriously, like that, or at least one reg, you know, then they also identify, yes, I am devotee of Krishna, you know, I am servant of Prabhupada, but, you know, from whatever reasons, either they're honest and it's weakness, or, you know, it's somebody else's fault, so they have to work out here. Whatever, however they see it, but they identify as devotees. Right? Up to someone who's very serious, very strong, very together, and very dedicated to pushing on the mission. So in any case, the living entity taking birth is someone who didn't quite finish up Krishna consciousness due to some attachment. So it can be very more subtle or more gross. So depending upon our consciousness, we're going to attract one such devotee. So if we're not so Krishna conscious, we may attract one of those devotees who's out there, who's into drugs, into being, you know, a separate, you know, has been through their, you know, 25th marriage and is really fired up about this whole, you know, this pramada between the men and the women and all that. But they're devotees. If you ask them, their goal is to go back to Godhead. But they have certain priorities to take care of today. You know, they're maybe more important than Krishna consciousness. But if you ask them what's their ultimate, they'll always say they want to go back to Godhead. So if we're not conscious, we're going to attract that living entity. If we're more Krishna conscious, we'll attract a more serious devotee. But in any case, it will be a devotee. Like that. Otherwise, karmis don't take birth in devotee families. But sometimes we wonder, how come they're so crazy? They're our own kids. But this is why. Because you look at around the devotees that are here. Right? You take birth again because you didn't make it. Right? Under certain circumstances, of course, then great acharyas are coming and all this and that. But generally we see that the, you know, very special parents also. But in any case, even if they're, whatever is the arrangement, so that is there. But we cannot take the risk. We cannot take the risk that we're going to be the one that the acharya takes birth in our family. We have to be very careful and very conscious that unless we're conscious, we may end up with, you know, one of the fringes. Right? And then we wonder, how come, you know, they have all these desires and all that, you know, we train them in that, and then they go off and do all these different things. It's because that was their attachments in their last life, and they didn't burn them off. So they're this life. So again, we give the training in this, but they've forgotten about last life, so they've forgotten about those attachments. But Krishna will give them the choice again. So they will be put in contact with these things. But now, due to our association and training, we can give them that strength that now they can leave them. You know? So that is the duty of parents, to give that training, to see that the children are in the best situation in which they can overcome those difficulties that were there from last life. Like that. So it's not that the whole Grihastha Ashram is a, you know, bowl of cherries, you know, it's a lot of problem, you know. So the whole thing is the living entity entering into understands all this, then with this, if they want to have children, then they move forward with this understandings, with this consciousness, you know, in a planned way. Then they have Krishna conscious children, and then everything progresses very nicely. But if one thinks just because we're a devotee, it doesn't matter, the demigods are there, they see. The air is everywhere. Even the lights are off, the air is in the room. The bed is held up by the earth. The 10 directions do happen to be in the room. It's not, you know, just a infinitesimal point with no space in it. There is east, west, north, south, the corners and up and down. They're all there, they all see. And it's all written in the books. And then later on, one gets the benefits from that. So due to illusion, one forgets. One thinks it doesn't matter. Who will know? Right? We've made wonderful arrangements. We've gone to a secluded place. No one knows. You know, whoever it is, relatives are not here. You know, temple will not know. You know, all these different things. Lights are off. Who will know? But so many people know. Because you have 8 directions, that's 8 demigods. Right? And then up and down, that's Brahma is up. He's ahead of our Sampradaya. And down is Baliraj. You know? So all these people know. Right? Then Bhumi Devi knows. Right? Vayu knows. They all know. And of course, we cannot forget Lord in the heart. He gets also to see all this. So all this is going on. So the living entity has to understand all this. Then he can very dynamically get out of it. Because the whole point is we've only gotten a body that has gender, this particular kind of material body with gender, because we want to enjoy the Lord's energy rather than the Lord enjoy it. So we're given that facility by giving these bodies so that you want to do it, you can do it. Okay. But it's not that there's not reaction for it. But Krishna says, if it is based on religious principles, dharma-virudho, then that is glorious. Because that is being done with knowledge, with planning, without this pramada. Then those children will also be without that pramada. Otherwise, if it's because of this pramada, then we are going to attract a soul who also has the similar attraction. But if it's without, then the result that you get is very special. Like that. It's very glorious. Lord Chaitanya was always happy when the Grihasthas had children, because then here's another devotee. Here's another person who can carry on the preaching mission. Like that. So that is not the problem. So the point is one should use this verse for oneself, not against others. Like this. This verse applies to everyone. You know, because even we are not married, even we don't deal with the women, still our cloth, you know, our gizmos that we have, well, that's all material nature. So we also cannot be bewildered by that. I see so many times the brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, they very much like to wear the clothing that is like in fashion for their, from what was their, how you say, sphere of activities before. If they were kind of more street kids, they'd like to wear that stuff. I see it. They're wearing all their black stuff and this and their coats and their jean jackets or whatever it is. They're wearing that because it's attractive to them. Like that. One of the funniest things I saw was in the East Block, because in the East Block it was like, when it first opened up, jean jackets were like the symptom, were they like the, how you say, not symptom, but symbol, yes, yeah, symbol of like, you know, Western civilization, you know, like that. So the funniest thing is you'd see all these, you know, 17, 18 year old brahmacharinis all dressed very nicely in saris and all that and looking, you know, very feminine, and they all have these jean jackets on the outside of their saris, you know. It would look very funny, you know. But they would think these are looking very attractive, you know, so they want to dress very nicely. So the material energy also empowers, Krishna also empowers all these things. So that's material energy. And then we're trying to enjoy that. So this shloka applies to everybody, you know, on various levels. Of course, here it is being that if you don't heed on the subtle level, it will come to the gross level as described here. That's the whole point. Even if it's distinction, adoration, profit, or any of these kind of things. Because why do we want to have something fancy? Because then we're distinct. Right? Fashion, this whole thing is you get, if you're really into fashion, you're getting something someone else doesn't have. Right? Big fashion houses only have one of one thing. Right? Because who buys that, they want to be the only one at the party that has it on. If two people have it on, it's a complete devastation. You know? I mean, it's a complete, you know, it's like your world ends right there. You know? You have to be unique. You have to be distinct. So, so the whole, basically, material consciousness means this attraction, this pramada. But just in the beginning, we may see it in the material energy other than the particular body, rather than the opposite sex. But that whole thing is the foundation for that subtle turning into gross. Right? You only dress fancy because you want to attract the opposite sex. That is the purpose of it. Otherwise, there's no, what's the purpose? You know? Right? What do you call it? Yeah. It's okay. Any other questions? Yes.
Right, how do you understand that in the spiritual world you have the eternal constitution of cowherd boys and grihasthas, and then you're saying that all the spiritual world is all Prakriti and Krishna is the only Purush, but you have other living entities who are acting in a sort of Purush type format. So,
but they're never enjoying. They're never trying to enjoy. Like in Vaikuntha, you see the husband and wives, they're married, but they're never thinking about enjoying each other. They sit around and talk about Vishnu, about Krishna. They just sit there and talk, oh, nice day, you know, oh, this and that, and we'll offer prayers like this, we'll do this service, and like that. It just makes for a nice, it creates the proper atmosphere. Right? Creates the proper. In other words, these rasas are for Krishna. Krishna is the embodiment of all five rasas. He is rasa. He is the form of rasa. That means all these five rasas are in him. And the living entity manifests one of those rasas with Krishna. You know? But to enhance, they may have basically in a non-exploitive state these rasas with someone else. Someone is their mother, or someone is their wife or child or all this, because it creates the atmosphere in which Krishna can enjoy these exchanges on five rasas. So it's all part of their service. I mean, it's not that there's any consideration of exploitation or enjoyment there. It's completely different than here. Like that. Yes.
We've been listening to some tapes. It's about Tulsi Devi, her life. And in that story, she's supposed to be having a relationship with Sridhar or Sudama. I question whether there was any relationships like that in the spiritual world.
No, this is this story is happening in the material world. It's not happening in the spiritual world. Right? Mm-hmm. Few things that has to be looked at here to understand the story. One is that even though everything connected with Krishna's pastimes is eternal, when he comes into the material world, he gives them all a beginning, a middle, and an end, so that the living entities in the material world can relate to them. Just like Krishna is eternally with Sudarshan Chakra, but there's the pastime where Agni Dev gives him Sudarshan Chakra. Understand? Krishna is eternal, but he has the pastime of birth. Right? You understand? He's eternally married to Rukmini, but then he has the pastime of marriage here. So all that is going on just to establish. So what we have to understand in here, this purpose of this story is how Krishna takes the form of Shaligram and how Tulsi manifests as a tree. That's what the purpose of this story is. Right? So as we have, you know, these different stories are just to establish these things so that everything can go on. If they just appeared out of nowhere, then someone may be a little bit, you know, maybe hard for them to digest. You understand? So then there's a system, there's a story, how each aspect of the transcendental pastimes is manifest. Second thing is this story that is brought out is taken from the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. Brahma Vaivarta Purana is taking the Lord's pastimes and activities, but presenting it in language and in description for those in the mode of passion. Right? Like you see in the Bhagavatam, it also will sometimes say that, you know, somebody, you know, fell down or had a relationship with their wife or some other woman. It doesn't get into details, because everybody from time immemorial understands what sex is, so it's not something you have to get into details about. You know? So those who are interested mainly in spiritual life, that is their goal, then we see in the Bhagavatam, they don't get into details. Who has to get into details? Only enough detail to understand what was the mistake or what was the thing. What was the thing that caused them to fall into that so that we can be careful for ourselves. But the details of what went on, you know, a spiritualist couldn't care less. Absolutely is not interested. But those in the mode of passion, they're very interested. They want to know all the details. You know, oh, tell us more. You know, just like I remember when we joined, it was like someone fell down, then that was it. You know, okay, they fell down. When they came back, it's, oh yeah, you know, Maya got me this time. Oh, right, how good, you're back, you know, back into the service then. But now it's like, they fell down like this, they did that, on this, and that, and what, did they do like this, and what, what's going on? Because the mode of passion has increased, and devotees don't know it, they have great taste for this. Who cares? You know, even if you give description of what Krishna talks here, dharma virudho, it will still be insane. So only those who are in the mode of passion want to know all these little details. So Brahma Vaivarta Purana is written for such personalities. So then it gets into all the gory details. Like that. Therefore, even though the story is true, there is interpolation in that Purana, how much of what going there. So, and in any case, that mood is not how we approach those personalities. So it's there, it's truth. This is how Krishna arranged his pastime to come as Shaligram and Vrindadevi to come as Tulsi. Right? But other than that, it's not something we sit around and talk about. We have more important things to talk about. We have the whole Krishna book and stuff like that. These are more tasty. Understand? So because it is Krishna's pastime, then these devotees take part in it. This is how it works. In the material world, this is how it works. Right? So then, these things go on. So because of our nature of morality, this, that, then they become hard to digest. How is it someone from there here? But we have to understand, those persons aren't attached to this stuff at all. It's not that they find any pleasure or any interest in such things. But as far as the pastime goes, then if need be, if they're the one chosen to take part in this way, then this is how they do it. And then you have something to write in the Rajasic Puranas for those in the mode of passion to read about, rather than read some other, you know, steamy novel. At least, you know, they can stick to reading the Rajasic Puranas. You know, Bhagavatam mentions Maharaj. Bhishma Dev's father. Santanu, yes. He was very attracted to Ganga Devi. And that's it. One sentence. Right? Mahabharata is 3 pages describing how much he was attracted. Because Mahabharata isn't written for Paramahamsas. Bhagavatam is. So Paramahamsas couldn't care less. You know, they've heard about it a million times, they've done it a million times. Now it's time to get out. Enough. So like that, Vyasadeva writes for his audience. He's the literary incarnation of the Lord. You know, to write. Yes, Matis.
Recently reading, I had a question that I couldn't quite understand. Why is it that in the 9th canto, right before the 10th canto, the subject matter appears to become less transcendental? Story of Purava and Vasi, and so many romantic, like, kingly stories are there just before proceeding into the 10th canto. Is that just because they're Puranic histories? Or is there some reason for relevance to their position?
If to be qualified as a Purana, then you must give the history of the Sun and Moon dynasties. So generally you'll see that those will be going in generally a chronological order. Though stories that back up what goes on are not chronological. But you'll generally see, so if Puru Rava was much later in the line, is much closer to Krishna, then you'd probably see it come there. You have to see how it's coming in. Is it coming in because he's the king mentioned?
Yes.
In the line? If it's that, then it'll be that. If it's that they're talking about another subject and then they give him as an example, then that may be proving something else.
It's generally completely chronological.
Yeah, so then that will just be because it's coming there. But the same time is those who are going to enter into the 10th canto have to be able to understand how to avoid this. So sometimes it may be after hearing so many things. See, because generally the Puranic systems, you start at the top, you start the concepts, you come down to the details. You know? Just like I started this class like that. So by starting up there, everyone can get the concepts, then you can start coming down to the details, and then everyone finds application. Well, if I started out on details, and it's, oh, here goes another Swami on the, you know, getting into this thing and harassing everybody, you know? So the Puranas generally talk like that. Like, generally, when we describe Kanistha Madhyam Uttam, we'll do it in that order, but you find the scriptures always start Uttam Madhyam Kanistha. First, you get to understand what's the complete reality. Then you understand a slight variation of that. Then you understand. So first there's Krishna's creation. Then there's Brahma's creation. Then there's the Prajapatis. Then you have the kings. Like that. So it naturally just comes. You start from is what Krishna and where it came from. Then you connect it here. And then when you start seeing more and more of these strands, then you start to see how to connect everything to Krishna.
But the Bhagavad Purana is special because of the canto.
Yes. Yeah.
So that means the other Puranas must have some information about the pastimes of Krishna in terms of
yes.
the dynasty of the sun and moon, like we see
yeah.
what Ramachandra's pastimes have covered somewhere earlier.
Yes.
So that means that in the Bhagavad Purana, if it wasn't for the pastimes of Krishna being delineated in such elaboration, it would be just simply another Purana in the mode of goodness?
Basically, but it still is going even beyond goodness. Because the ones in goodness, generally you'll see they're emphasizing on Vishnu. Like that. So Bhagavatam then is emphasizing on Swayam Krishna. Though it talks about, but we always see Krishna, even we're talking like in the first canto, and I think first canto and third canto, first, is the so many stories of the Pandavas are there. But we see them generally in relation to Krishna from Vrindavan has come to Dwarka and is performing these pastimes. We're not seeing them just as, but in the other Puranas you'll just see Krishna in Dwarka, Krishna here, Krishna in Vrindavan. And even like in the Brahma Vaivarta gives a lot of pastimes of Radha and Krishna. But but those generally who are reading all these see them that Vishnu is so wonderful, he's also performed these pastimes. Because all incarnations are coming from Vishnu. So Vishnu has performed pastimes as a boar, as Nisringa, you know, also as Radha and Krishna. And Vishnu is doing so many wonderful pastimes. You know, like in South India, you go to the temples, they go to Tirupati, you know, which is like the epitome of, you know, opulence and awe and reverence. And nobody sits there and chants, says his name, Venkateshwar. They always say Govinda, Govinda. They stand in the lines, they always refer to him as Govinda. Like that. Where the place on all these major South Indian temples also, where the deities rest, they have nice bed with canopy and mirrors all over the walls and ceiling and all these, and pictures of Radha Krishna Lili on the walls. And if you ask why do you call them Govinda, why do you set things up like this? And they say because Vishnu likes to remember these pastimes because these are like his favorite pastimes. Yeah, so the perspective is different. You know, I saw one lady come up to Udupi Krishna and say all these prayers about the gopis and all the pastimes and this and that, you know, and then after she finishes, then she goes back into, you know, her rituals and her pranams and all the different things. So the mood is completely on reverence, but it's that everybody likes these pastimes, right? And I think at least specifically one, but I think three out of the 12 Alwars talked a lot about Vrindavan. One specifically, Andal, all she talked about was Vrindavan. All of her songs are all about Radha and Krishna. Radha and Krishna, Krishna and the gopis. Like that. So they very much like to hear and sing these songs and, you know, singing of these different Krishna Karinamita and Gita Govinda, all these different things. They all go on in South, but it's all done in the mood of awe and reverence. So it's.
I was told once that it's very important for somebody at a sampradaya to take the Puranas that we use as pramana or evidences by Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī. Because otherwise, if one doesn't do that, if one approaches the Puranas, just as you're pointing out, or anything, without the proper understanding of the principles given by our acharyas, you can pick something up and you can add it in. But actually the mood is not correct or to the goal that Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī and all our line is advocating.
Yes.
And thereby it becomes adulterated, even though you're actually talking about Radha and Krishna or Vishnu himself.
This is a very good point. Very good point. Because it's the mood of the acharya that is the most important thing you can gain. Because it's the mood that gives where you go in the spiritual world. Depending upon your mood, if you accept Krishna as the Supreme Lord and the Enjoyer, then you get yourself to the spiritual realm. Now, where you go in the spiritual realm depends upon your mood. Like that. Yam kama krodha sahaja pranayara bhiti vatsalya moha guru gaurava sevya bhavai sanchintya, what is it? Sanchintya rupa? Sanchintya Rupa? Is it Sanchintya Rupa? Yeah, because the Rupa, that your form that you get and the relation you have is based upon that particular affection that you have for the Lord. So just like the sages at Naimashtra, it was not sages, at Dandakaranya, they approach Ramachandra and we're attracted to you in the conjugal rasa. And he says, okay, it's very nice, but you know, not now. You have to wait till next birth when I'll come as Krishna. Because Ramachandra has one wife, Ekapatni Vrata. He has taken that vow. So, but he is Krishna. He is Swayam. He is complete personality of Godhead. He's not a expansion. That's why you see in Sadbhuj that you have Krishna, Rama, and Lord Chaitanya there. Because he is, but he doesn't manifest, he doesn't interact with devotees in all the rasas. I heard a lecture in Bombay, Prabhupada said that it was on Ramachandra's appearance day. I think it was 74. He said Rama could play the flute, but he doesn't. Because in his lila, in his pastimes, it doesn't fit. Like that. So they're attracted by Ramachandra in this way. Because he is the full, complete personality of Godhead. But he doesn't interact in this way. He will not, as the enjoyer, the Vishaya, he won't interact with the devotee, his ashraya, in that way. He'll only interact with devotees as a neutrality and servitorship. So therefore, he says, you have to then take birth in the pastimes of Krishna, when he comes as Krishna. So it's very important, it's the mood will get you exactly to where you want to go. So one has to take that mood. Otherwise, as Mataji points out, you'll end up somewhere else, which would be a great misfortune that those coming from, specifically from Vrindavan, and in Vrindavan, opening up the most wonderful way of serving Krishna, they pull you out, they establish you on the path, they show you the path, and then you go into another path that you could have done with another avatar and those devotees connected there.
Well, what to speak of concocting your own path, because most of the time you go nowhere. So
yeah.
You're taking on to try to work out the basic problem of not being able to surrender.
Surrender, yeah.
So you go nowhere.
Yeah, like sahajas, they go nowhere. Why do they go nowhere? Because even though they think about Radha Krishna, this and that, the residence of Vrindavan means the residence with their mentality. They think that these people are the most unloyal and, you know, just, you know, they're ridiculous. How can they take serious? Because the whole idea is that the residents of Vrindavan, you meet them first. And when one comes to the platform of understanding one's relationship and entering into the service in that relationship, first you meet them, the servants there. Then they see how you perform service, you know? What's your attitude, how you do, what's your mood, everything. They first see your culture. They first see your qualities. That's why it's always the 25, you know, 26 qualities of devotee. They want to see the qualities. Then if the qualities are nice, then they introduce you to Krishna. Then you see Krishna. Then if they see the they don't introduce you, they show you from a distance. Then if they see the mood is proper, they bring you closer. Then they introduce you. Then, after being introduced, everything is very nice. Then they say, well, why do you keep going back? Why don't you just stay here with us? Then that's called vastu-siddhi. Then one is now, one's form is the spiritual form. One no longer has any connection to the material form. So, you have to impress them first. So if you make up your own system or do your own thing, then, you know, what do they care? Because the residents of Vrindavan, their mood is complete surrender, absolute surrender. Yes, Martin.
And they come in the form of the acharyas.
Yes.
So on this plane, where we have material bodies and material ignorance covers us, they appear in the form of the saintly persons. And then when we follow them here, in that way, learn, train under them here, then they manifest their identity, their eternal identity, and our services transferred to that plane. So it's so important that we learn the principles on this level for surrender. Beginning, you know, Bhakti Murta called brings so much emphasis on surrender. So it comes right down to our level where we stand, you know, with all of these things far above us. But if you can't surrender, if you can't work out these things in a very, very elementary stage, then it can be difficult to imagine all of the things that you're thinking about that seem inconceivable to one person. So they come down to...
That's very, very important point. Very essential. Many times this is very much overlooked. We'll get to you. This is a very, very important point, because there will be many people who will say, well, Prabhupada's just giving you basic. We will give you the higher. But the point is that those acharyas have come here. The same persons that are with Krishna, they have come here. And because Krishna has anxiety, means so many living entities have left his service and are here. He wants them back. He's expanded the living entities to enjoy with them. So he's in anxiety that living entities not enjoying with them, and they're here in the material world. So then he comes himself to bring them back. And so the acharyas, understanding this, the Lord's anxiety, they come here and try to relieve that anxiety. So in that mood of complete surrender, they give themselves to the mission. So the mission becomes utmost importance for those who are following Rupa Goswami, because the mission is established by Rupa Goswami. The Vishva Vaishnav Raja Sabha is established by Rupa Goswami. That is the machine to bring in the living entities. So he has established that the devotees work together, and the senior devotees discuss together and give directions that everybody within the sampradaya follows, including themselves. So there's this mood of putting oneself under authority. Even the senior Vaishnavas are putting themselves under the authority of the group of senior Vaishnavas, even though they may be part of that group. Then in that, that comes down to us. So the same way they're dedicating themselves, means we want to get into the pastimes there. That means we have to be able to surrender ourselves like they are surrendering there. As Mataji pointed out, that's way above us. So they come here to our plane and show us how we can surrender to the Lord. Get that mood of surrender, but by dealing with what situation we're in now. And then, so when we develop that mood of surrender that they have to the mission that's given to us by Rupa Goswami, then we will be qualified to enter there, because the one just turns into the other. You know, there's that verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita where you have the past, it shows a very nice picture. Krishna and the gopis are all dancing there and everything, and then the next picture everybody's in the same pose, but now it's Chaitanya Leela. So it transforms. The one naturally gives rise to the other. So one cannot underestimate the loyalty and dedication to the lotus feet of the previous acharyas through our acharya. That cannot be underestimated. If we underestimate this to any degree, then we greatly risk our chances of spiritual success. Greatly risk. This point of... Yeah. It's even the Vedic literatures talk so strongly about this, that you have a line, you have your acharyas, they give you a mood, you have to stay in that. If you change mood, even though you change from one Veda, let's say you're following the Rig Veda, and within the Rig Veda you're following a particular Shaka who has a particular Rishi as their head, so then if you switch to another, you're following that, you're born, you're brought up in that, you know those rituals, you follow those rituals. Then you decide to switch to another Shaka, another Veda, another line, even the same Veda but a different line. Then it's considered an offense to the Rishi of that line, the head of that line. And one will not get any benefit. One will go down. One will go to hell. Even though it's a perfectly bona fide line. But you've surrendered. And if you switch that line, it won't work. And that's in the Vedas, where they're completely oblivious to, you know, anything that's going on in the spiritual world. This applies to someone in Karmakanda or Jnanakanda or, you know, worshipping demigod, anything. They can't do it. So this principle is there, because the principle is there so that when we come to this, then when the residents of the spiritual world come here, we will stick to their line. And then Rupa Goswami says, not only do we have to stick within the line, we have to stick to the line through our acharya. We have to view it, because he is coming down. It's not just, you know, it's not just chance. We see Srila Prabhupada has been sent. So he is our acharya, the founder acharya. That means all those who follow after him for as long as his mission lasts have to see things through his vision. Then you actually understand what is the mood of Rupa and Sanatana, the mood of Vishwanath, the mood of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Saraswati Thakur. Then we actually understand, because he gives us that mood. This is how you look at it. Because you can look at them from so many angles, but he says, no, this is the angle. Then the preaching mission is dynamic, and our going back to Godhead is dynamic, yes.
You were just mentioning something about the Vedas, that if somebody switched their line.
Yeah.
But we also see that within the Vedas, we're talking about the process of worshipping Lakshmi Narayan up to the point of worshipping Radha Krishna. So what is the prescribed means of elevation? If your line is Lakshmi and Sringa, or Vedic, you know, some Vedic situation, what is the appropriate means of shifting line for the purpose of elevation over many, many lives? There must have been an appropriate method and an inappropriate method.
Yeah. We can look at it two things. Generally in the Vedic, what it means is specifically the process of ritual. Who you are worshipping that's not as important, but it's just the system of ritual that is important. It means, like, let's say you have a pot. Now, according to Samaveda, you will install it with 3 mantras. According to Yajurveda, you'll install it with 8 mantras. Who goes in the pot, that's another thing. That they're not worried about. But it's just how you'll do that system. That's what they worry about.
Maintenance of the system.
Yes. Maintaining of the system, because the point is then when it comes along, when you become elevated enough where you've done all the Vedas, you've done all these things, now you're ready for, you know, true spiritual understanding, then we are given a process by Rupa Goswami. Is his deity is Govindaji, and Govindaji is the Lord of process. He's the Abhideya Adidev. He's the Lord of the process of devotional service, and Rupa Goswami is his perfect follower. So he is the example of the Siksha Guru, the perfect Siksha Guru. So he gives us that process. We have to be able to stick to that perfectly. And Sanatana Goswami, his Lord is Madan Mohan, who is the Adidev of Sambandha. So he gives us he is the perfect Diksha Guru. So he gives us the systems of ritual. Like that, in the mood of how you approach ritual. So between the ritual and the process, means ritual is part of the process, between the ritual and the purposes of the ritual, the goals of the ritual, the actual relationships between everything in the ritual given by Rupa, and then the ritual given by Sanatana, then we have perfect direction. So we don't leave that. Means if we leave that for, let's say, you know, Sri Sampadaya stuff, the rituals are common much of the time. The padatis they follow, we follow the same. But the mood in which they do it is vastly different. Vastly different. Very, very different. Even though it's the same ritual, but the mood in which it's done is so different that one will take you to Golok and the other one will take you to Vaikuntha. But if you've been trained in all that in the Golok, and then you switch to the Vaikuntha, then according to the scriptures, there's a high level of doubt that you'll ever get to Vaikuntha, because the Vaikuntha Vasis also are not interested in someone who is not chaste. They also are not looking for, it's not that, you know, it's just, you know, it's not a refugee camp or something like that. You'll stay here because it's a mood of surrender. Yes.
This also is not within terms of Srila Prabhupada saying that this is not a religion, Krishna consciousness, but it's a science.
Yes.
Everything is put there very scientifically by the acharyas. They didn't just write something out of a sort of assertive inspirational faith.
Yes.
So it's written very systematically to actually bring one to the proper consciousness and thereby come back to the proper behavior and then to the proper destination.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's very, very important. As what Mataji mentioned before, is we see the Goswamis do go into all the literatures, Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipa, no, they've gone into all of them, and out of them they pull, like you have Skanda Purana, I think it's 100,000 verses. It's the biggest of all the Puranas. 100,000. That means it's practically 7 times bigger than the Bhagavatam. Like that. And they've gone into it and taken out a couple of shlokas. That was worthwhile. Those fit our mood. And they've left all the other, you know, 900,000, 9,000, you know, and 95 verses. And they've taken those few, because that then they use. And they've gone into all these Puranas and they've taken what we want. So when we, if we read those Puranas, we have to read them through our Acharya's vision. Otherwise, and if we can't reconcile, better don't read. That's why it says don't read too many things, because unless we're very powerful and very deep in our realization, we cannot reconcile all the seeming differences. There is no differences, but unless one's very broad, one can't see that, you know. So the acharyas can read the whole thing, see how it actually fits within to the transcendental, and they take out, this is the essential verse here, that is actually, all this is trying to teach you this point. Right? Like I think one of the ones out of the Skanda Purana or Devi Purana, because they only talk about demigods, this, that, so many things. Shiva Supreme and so many things. One of it is, unless you worship all 33 million demigods, if you want to do a demigod worship, all 33 million, you can't just worship one, you'll go to hell. If you pick out one, two, the others will all get insulted. Because the universal, the demigods are part of the universal form. So you can't worship somebody and just worship their little finger and ignore the rest of them. The person will get offended. So the universal form will get offended if you only approach one part, you know, just as eye, you know, or just as nose, you know, like that. So therefore you have to take the complete form. So you have to worship all 33 million. Who can do that? Therefore the point is, of that whole Purana is, worship of the demigods as a process is useless. So they've taken that shloka out and said, yes, this is what the purpose is of this whole Purana. 100,000 verses are to teach you this verse.
That's why you see in every Hindu home, I have so many pictures on the altar.
Yeah, want to make sure they get in everybody, you know. Yeah, yeah, you know. Everybody, you know.
Maybe a question you can answer more fully tonight on your presentation on the Gurukul and the purpose of the Gurukul, but seeing you touched on it today. But what is the purpose then of having or maintaining a Gurukul institution when we may be attracting like Vana Sanskar or people that may be not qualified to attend that institution as a student?
That would be a second question. The first question would be, why maintain a grihastha ashram that produces Varna Shankara? That would be the first, that would be my first question. Did you know? Somehow or another, we will look at the situation, oh, gurus aren't doing well, sannyasis aren't doing well, brahmacharis aren't doing well, so we should kind of do away with these things. We have to be practical, right? We're pragmatists these days. But if we look at the grihastha ashram, what is it producing? You know? Like everybody went to the Himalayas, they heard the Himalayas was going to give birth to a child, you know, progeny. So they all thought Himavan is big, powerful, you know, very, you know, something very special. So everybody lined up there, they all were standing there, and then at the moment came that a bunch of rats ran out. And everybody went, how is this possible? Himavan, you know, they gave birth to a bunch of rats. So we have the first question is back to that, is why do we maintain an ashram that only produces Varna Shankara? Right? Means there's plenty of souls out there. This mission is going to go on for 10,000 years, and it's only going to be increasing. We're just at the beginning. So naturally it's there. We may attract the the lower end, but as the time goes, Prabhupada said it's the third generation that will be, they'll be able to light fire by mantra, they'll be the real pujaris. I even heard he said that they'll be able to fly on the carpets. Like that, because of purity. So we have to start somewhere. So therefore, we maintain, even though we're maybe not getting the top quality kids, but we should be trying for that. Same time as we may be running the gurukuls, even though the kids aren't the standard, you know, the sages saw these kids before, they'd probably, you know, pick up and, you know, grab their spoons and run off into the forest, you know. Mm. But we're doing. Because the whole point is then from the second generation, then we get the third we get the fourth, and then the quality increases.
Interesting question on that line too. I've often pondered that third generation, maybe some of the current devotees coming back and taking.
That's why I made the point. Don't be negligent in this principle where Krishna says dharma virudho, because they have to take birth somewhere. You know, especially if they've advanced. See, if they don't advance much, then they may not take birth immediately in the family, in devotee families. Tendency is to make a detour to the heavenly planets. Then come back, and then sometimes it's not even devotee families, aristocratic families, Brahmin families, wealthy families. Because then they have time for spiritual life if they want to take it up. But those who are born in families means they made tangible progress in devotional service, but then became deviated. That's what Prabhupada mentions in that one. I forget who the letter was to, Janardhan or somebody. He says that it's the worst thing to give sense gratification to these children, because they've come here to further their spiritual life. Like that. So he mentioned that this is what we should give them. If they take it, that's another thing, but this is what we're offering. You know, this is what they've come for, so we give it to them. If they take it or not, they're individuals. So we do the best we can.
Or
you can continue to ask.
Yeah.
If anybody has
any questions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Alright, she was talking about the chastity of the Vaikuntha Vasis and those sort of principles. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's so many Vaikuntha Vasis associating with Lord Chaitanya.
Yeah. So that's between Lord Chaitanya and Vaikuntha. We have to understand also that in Goloka we have Dwarka, we have Mathura.
And specifically Murari Gupta, who was in Kashmir.
Yeah, so then Ramachandra is there. They can be in both. Yes.
Is it not sometimes said that Murari Gupta has also a form in which he can participate in Chaitanya Rita, but separate, somewhat different than his Ayodhya?
Oh, I'm sure it means the living entities in the spiritual realm, according to the Lord's blessings, can expand.
It's not a hard and fast rule.
No, see, we are stuck. You know, we're the only ones. And as we have this one 10,000th, the tip of the hair, and we're overwhelmed here. But we see the pastimes of Krishna are going on. Like, they're also said to be, how do you say? Eternal, because it's like Krishna performs one pastime here, immediately he's in the next universe. That moment, as soon as he's picked up Govardhan Hill, the next universe he's picking up, next universe he's picking it up, next universe he's picking it up. So that's eternal. So that means Mother Jashoda and all the residents of Vrindavan also have to be in all those universes. So by Krishna's grace, they've expanded into all those. So they may have unlimited forms. So just to have two forms, one in Ayodhya and one in Chaitanya Lila within Golok, then that's not a problem.
Why does Srila Prabhupada say it's okay to worship Ganesh in the nectar of devotion?
That is, Rupa Goswami is mentioning that, and then this is what is the verse, right? But then we have to understand who is Ganesh and what the acharyas say about that.
Spiritual reasons. Spiritually.
Yes. So this is what the acharyas say. They say instead of worshipping Ganesh, we worship Vishvakshena. Vishvakshena is the commander-in-chief of the Vaikuntha army. So it means if there's any problems in Vaikuntha, which there aren't, they have an army to remove those. Right? But they never have to use them. Right? They never have to use the army, but he is the commander-in-chief. So no, let's finish this question. So then his potency to be able to remove any difficulties is then empowered into that personality, who then comes as Ganesh. So it's not the person that sits there with the pot belly and the elephant's head that is removing the obstacles. It is the potency that is coming from Vishvakshena. And Vishvakshena's potency is coming from Nrisimhadev. So we see Ganesh holds, it mentions the Brahma Samhita, he holds the lotus feet of Nrisimhadev on his tumali. Tumali aren't the trunks, tumali are these two bumps. Elephant has two bumps on its head. Like these are the tumali. No, if you look in the dictionary, tumali is the bumps on the head. Like that. So he holds the lotus feet of the Lord on his head there, on these two bumps, one foot on one bump, one foot on the other bump. And by that way he gets the power to remove, so it's Nrisimhadev who's removing. So for us, basically, to remove obstacles is the potency of Guru and Nrisimhadev. So basically Ganesh gets left out of the picture. But the concept is that in the Vedic thing you have to approach Ganesh before you do anything. So according to Pancharatra, you approach the Guru before you do anything. So that is how we do that. So when you have a pot to install, you don't install Ganesh. It means if we're just doing something, we invoke the blessings of the Guru or for protection of Nrisimhadev. If we're doing actually a ritual, and at this point there must be a pot in which Ganesh is installed, we'll install Vishvakshena inside.
What about in the Dawn, where they have Hanuman and Parvati and Murshida? Okay, protect the Dawn?
Yes, means the Dham here then has its doorkeepers and all that. So then Lord Shiva also then took the form of a gopi and was protecting one of the gates. So he protects the Dham, and you can say more.
I've heard the prophet say so many times about Pancharatra Kiviti, and that we're following Pancharatra Kiviti, not Vedic Kiviti.
Yes.
Can you explain what Pancharatra Kiviti is?
Yes. That is interesting. You have the Vedas. The Vedas have four parts. You know, the first part is called the Samhita, in which all the verses of the Veda are written. All the shlokas. It's only shlokas. Then the next part is called the Brahmanas. And the Brahmanas then are where is explanation how to use those Vedic mantras in ritual, in yajnas and in all the samskaras, whatever you have to do within the Vedic culture. Then the next section is called the Aranyakas. And in those Aranyakas, then those are explained the purposes that is going on in those rituals. Then the next is the Upanishads, which explain the philosophy that's going on, that's being presented by the verses and through the rituals. Like that. That's why we always end up with these four parts, Rupa Goswami mentions. You have the sambandha of what are the items and what are the things, then the ritual itself, then you have the purpose of the ritual, the goal of the ritual. So everything, whatever we have, it's also there in the Vedic thing. That's why the Vedic culture is the perfect culture for us to follow, because it's based on ultimately the Vrindavan philosophy. You have Vrindavan, and then that becomes slightly, you know, adjusted from the mood, the Lord's mood. Then you get Dwarka, then from that you get Vaikuntha, and then from that you get the material, you know, the realm here, human society that follows the Vedic culture. And then from that, then it starts going, you get all the very strange forms. Then Maya starts pulling out her, of the hat, things like, you know, what do you call it? You know, in the beginning you're talking Durga and Lalita, you know, all these different forms where she's still, you know, behaving very nicely within the culture. And then when you get down to Kali, you get down to Chandi, where she's running around with no clothes on, with her own head cut off, you know, and the blood is spurting into her own head, and these things, you know. And then Shiva also then takes natural these forms, Kala Bhairava, another kind of crazy madhouse forms. And then that's what you get. If you don't want to follow Vedic culture, then these are the mentalities you can have. You know? So the whole thing. So therefore we prefer following the Vedic culture, but given how it's given to us by the Acharyas. Right? When we say Vedic culture, we mean Vedic culture how Prabhupada's given it to us. It means how the Acharyas have given it to us. This is very important. We'll discuss more on that tonight. But the many times the devotees sing, well, Vedic culture is something old, it has nothing to do with us now. And the reality of today, but there is no reality today. You know, if BMW is a reality, then we can, yes, then we can talk reality of today. You know, like that. But reality is its connection with Krishna. Material nature is Krishna's. Krishna has empowered it. And it belongs to Krishna, it's supposed to be using it. That's the reality. So understanding this, then we go back to that culture. So the Vedic culture is the best way to understand how it is. But the point is that for those who are more materialistic, they see the Veda and the Brahmanas. Those who are interested in spiritual life see the Aranyakas and the Upanishads. Aranyakas are the literatures that explain what is the actual purpose behind the rituals. That's the third part of the Veda. In other words, the first part, yeah, like that. We'll get into this, a lot of this will come tonight. So then, so the Vedas there then have this, so in the Vedas then you have systems of worship, and especially worship of Vishnu, then one main system there is called Vaikhanasa, which means uses the Vedic mantras for worshipping Vishnu. It's actually purely a worship of Vishnu. It's not worshipping according to the Panchopasana, where you're just thinking of Vishnu as a demigod, you know. But this is for those who are actually want to worship Vishnu. But the problem with that system is you have to be born in those families. Like that. So it's arranged. If you actually have the proper consciousness to worship Vishnu in the proper mood, you know, without actually not just worshiping him as a demigod, you'll take birth in those families. It'll just happen. And then you worship the Lord with those Vedic mantras. It's just Vedic mantras. There's no other mantras. Then you have another system called Tantra, which doesn't use the Vedic mantras, but it uses all bead syllables and other things like that. And it's basically dealing with the material energy, you know. But it's very, very technical, very technical. And the Vedic worship is actually quite simple, but the mantras are very elaborate, so it takes a long time. You want to install something, you have to chant so many Vedic mantras, and that takes time. Well, the other is all very quick, because it's all more technical kind of ritual, with all mudras and mantras and that. But the problem with that is to really get really solid benefit out of it, to really do some serious worship with it, is you also generally have to be born in certain families. So one's restricted by this. So then, the Pancharatra is a third then system. These are all called agama. Agama means that which comes from. So they're all coming from the Brahmanas. It means all worship, all systems of ritual worship come out of the Brahmanas. Just how they come out then. So Pancharatra is then taking from both these systems, from the Vedic and from the Tantric. That's why you see in the Bhagavatam, in the instructions to Uddhava, Krishna says you can worship me either with Vedic, with Tantric, or a mix. So the mix is Pancharatra. So Pancharatra takes those things out of the Vaikhanasa and out of the Tantra, which are very practical, they work very nicely, and you don't have to be born in those families to use. but you have to be born into Pancharatra. So in any case, birth is important. But you're born into Pancharatra by initiation. That's why it's said that when at initiation the body changes, you do not have the same body. It's a different body. It means the body we had before initiation, that we could call, okay, this is more our body and this and that. But after initiation, that body is Krishna's. So we have to be more careful with it. It's not the same. Then one is qualified to worship the Lord through the Pancharatric system. So Pancharatra then is a mix of Vedic mantras and Tantra. You know, but
is it something that's written down somewhere? Is it something that the Goswamis have compiled? Or is it something that's eternal like the Vedic?
It's also eternal. The history of the Pancharatra, this is also very interesting and very important if we want to understand the relationship between the Pancharatric Marg and the Bhagavat Marg. Is the after Brahma, he heard all the Vedas. Then he understood the Vedas. Krishna had given him the essence in those four verses. Then, before he started the creation, then these two demons came from the back of the Lord, Madhu and Kaitava. So they were no ordinary demons because they came directly from the Lord. Because the backside of the Lord is adharma, irreligion. You know, generally like from some sweat or something they came. So then, because living entities are also born from sweat. So then they came out, because they're very powerful, not ordinary demons. They entered into the mind of Brahma, because they're demoniac, and stole the Vedas. They don't like these Vedas. You know, so they stole them from Brahma. So then here, you know, Brahma then, you know, when he went to access his memory, he found that there was an error there. the hard disk had crashed. So then he then went back to Krishna and said, "You please explain to me the Vedas again. But before you explain the whole Veda," because now he understood. First he heard the Veda, then he wanted to know what does it all mean. So then Krishna gave him the essence. Then he understood the purpose. So he knew that there was, you know, there's a purpose to it, that's more important than actually the Veda itself. The Veda is in support of that purpose. So then he asked Krishna, "Before you explain to me the whole Veda again, you explain to me the essence first, because in case I die, you know, before you've explained the whole thing, I'll already know the essence." So for 5 nights, then Krishna explained to him the essence of the whole Vedic literatures. So that knowledge is called the Pancharatra, or 5 nights, Pancharatra, like that. So it, in other words, is very practical. It's that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, we're his servants, and we worship him with paraphernalia. So seva, sevya, sevaka. We're all called sevaks, right? And we do seva. And the Lord is Sevya, who those services for. So it gives that very practical, means the Vedas give all the philosophy that, they give the ritual this, that, and then what's it for? What are you supposed to do with it? So the Pancharatra simply tells us, here's the Lord, you're his servant, here's the paraphernalia by which you should serve the Lord. So it's very direct, very practical. And it's on a level that we can grasp because we're conditioned. So we think in terms of nature, the material nature. So Pancharatra shows us how to take material nature and engage it in Krishna's service. And the
Pancharatra community is suitable for Kali Yuga, according to the Bhagavad.
Yeah. It's specifically made for Kali Yuga to match with the Sankirtan movement. Though the Pancharatra system is the eternal system, so in Dwapara Yuga, you can worship the Lord by Pancharatra also, or by Vaikhanas, or by Tantra. And you see Prabhupada generally refers to the Pancharatra like that, because that's a system that's more, that we will understand like that. Because if he says Vaikhanas, you know, what does that mean? You know? Is that, I'm just thinking, is that, I'm just trying to... So, because we're conditioned, we have to have the Pancharatra. Because we think in terms of the body, gross and subtle bodies. So the Pancharatra addresses the gross and subtle bodies and shows how to purify it. on the growth platform, we take our bath, like all the rules, how we take, we get up in the morning, we offer our obeisances, the rules about sleep, the rules on taking bath, using the toilet, cleaning ourselves afterwards, brushing our teeth, cleaning the tongue, you know, wearing neck beads, wearing tilak, dressing as devotees, chanting Gayatri, going to the temple, offering obeisances, ringing the bell, saying Jai Gornitai when we come into the temple, like this, all the rules that are all in that, when we eat, all the rules on worshipping Tulsi, that's all Pancharatra. That you worship guests, that we have our Sunday program, it's there because it's part of Pancharatra. You have to condition souls, have to do it. You have to take care. There's the Lord's guests, you have to take care of them. Serving the Vaishnavas, the system's how you serve, how you take Vishadam, how you worship Tulsi, how you take care of the Dham, that it should be clean, you do maha cleanings. This is all Pancharatra. So much of the time we think Pancharatra is just when you go in there and do Achman and wave some sticks. But no, our whole life is regulated by Pancharatra. What we do is deity worship. That's why it's said the Vaishnav is a Brahmin. So our culture is Pancharatra. So we're Brahmins by culture. We're not something else. Sometimes devotees like to think, well, we don't want to do this. We're Vaishyas. We're not. We're Brahmins. And if we follow the culture of the Brahmins, we're happy. If we follow another culture, then you can do it, but then you risk all the anomalies that come with it and the pains and all that. Because if you're going to be a Vaishya, then you better be given 50% of your money or you go to hell. Bus. That's it. No ifs, no ands, no buts. Right? You better be, you swept the floor, you better do the yajna to atone for all those living entities you killed. You're breathing, killing living entities. You're lighting your fire, you're killing living entities. You turn on your mixie, how many living entities get killed? You're not doing the rules for that, you go to hell, bus. Yes?
Can the Chaitanya Shikamita, to the Bhakti Vinod Thakur, elaborate all the details of Varnashram Dharma rules, not all, but reform. And then he explains that above that is Vaidhi Bhakti.
Yes.
And he gives all the things to be observed and not done and everything to Vaidhi Bhakti, and then he proceeds on to Raghunuga Bhakti above. So would that mean that the Pancharatriki comes in at this stage when somebody accepts to go beyond Varnashram?
Yes.
So Varnashram for us, in essence, is a step below us.
Yes, and therefore we just take from the Pancharatra with us what, I mean, from the Varnashram, what applies within Pancharatra. It means we're not doing all the things. So many times devotees think, oh, so many rules. Mm-hmm. But they don't know that it's been cut down to, like, you know, very small amount, so small amount, like that, you know? So small it's been cut down. But because this is all we know, we think, oh, it's very big. You know? We sharpen the knife on the tree and then cut the tree to test. Means we've learned from Prabhupada what is Vedic culture, then we use our knowledge to then cut what Prabhupada said. Ah, this is too ritualistic. Prabhupada says, no ritual. He's already cut out the rituals. He's taken the mango, taken off the skin, taken off the seed, cut it up for you, and said, eat it. You know, that's what he's done. But then we're taking it, no, we have to cut out all the rituals, you know. Somehow or another, the ritual of going to work remains, the ritual of getting our paycheck remains, the ritual of, you know, paying the, you know, the electricity bills and, you know, watching the television remains. All those rituals remain. But somehow or another, the rituals that Prabhupada's already taken, the essence, that these are the ones that can most easily be engaged in the Lord's service. Like taking our bath. You know, it's Vedic, it deals with the body, it's external, but by doing that it helps us so much in our consciousness that it's kept. But if you knew all the rules that go along with taking a bath, then we'd understand. When you take your bath, you have to be offering tarpana to all the forefathers, all the sages, all the so many different things. You know, when you chant your Gayatri, what you have to do, it takes longer to do the rituals to chant the Gayatri than chant the Gayatri. If you do all the things for Sunday Bani, it takes you 10 minutes easily. Chant all the mantras, all the achmans, all the sprinklings with water, all the prayers, calling calling Gayatri Devi to come, like that. Then after we chant, then offering prayers to her, asking her to go, worshiping all the different directions. You don't understand, you know, it's so ritualistic, you know. Like that. He's just taking the essence out of the whole Varnashram system. And that fits with Pancharatri. Because Vaidhi means regulation. So therefore the Vaidhi that's there, that is everything out of Varnashram that has something to do with directly going to Krishna. And all the ones that will take you to other parts of the universe and that have been left. It's already been cut down. So therefore, Vaidhi sadhana is a step up. It's and so the Pancharatra is part of that. So the Vedic culture that we mean is that Vedic culture. Prabhupada doesn't mean another Vedic culture. So devotees should understand it. Therefore, when Prabhupada says Vedic culture, it applies to now, today. And then if we read, sometimes devotees then read all the, this was happening, that was happening, you know, so many different things in the Vedic, and then they think, you know, but that's the next level down. That's for those who are not following Pancharatra, are not necessarily trying to go back to Godhead. So when we read other books, then if we come across things that aren't how Prabhupada talked about in the Vedic culture, then we can understand those are parts of the Vedic culture are meant for those who are not interested to go back to Godhead. Like I mentioned, Kshatriyas could eat meat, but that's for those who don't want to go back to Godhead. You know, they would go and hunt, as we saw. Muchukunda, he got the Lord's darshan, but because he had been killing animals as a king, therefore he had to take birth as a Brahmin in his next life. And then he would go back to Godhead. So it's not that there aren't reactions. They can do it. They won't go to hell, but they don't progress necessarily dynamically, spiritually. So therefore, one has this whole point, Mataji brought up before, is taking from the scriptures what the acharyas give us. That is the most essential point, not straying beyond it. You know, it's someone else. Just like we are married, we have our husband. It's not that all the other men out there that are married aren't bona fide husbands, but that's good for those girls. Not good for us. Like that. They're bona fide husbands, but they're not our husbands. We have our own. So in this way, it's good for someone else. Fine. Let them do. But we have our line. We maintain our chastity. Yes? What does it matter to you? What if he was? Then what?
Well, I was under the impression that when...
No, I'm just saying, what if he was? Then? Will that change your life? If Bhima was a vegetarian, does that suddenly drastically change?
No, it's just... No.
Okay. And if he wasn't, then does that still change?
No.
Okay. So then why worry about it?